Devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist, is considered to be in the mode of darkness. Purport, it has already been stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 2nd Chapter, that the highest, most glorious religion is the attainment of causeless, unmotivated devotional service. Okay, who knows that verse? That's an easy one. Savai pung sang paro dharmo. In pure devotional service, the only motive should be to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is not actually a motive, that is the pure condition of the living entity. In the conditioned stage, when one engages in devotional service, he should follow the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master in full surrender. The spiritual master is the manifested representation of the Supreme Lord because he receives and presents the instructions of the Lord as they are by disciplic succession. That's an important statement. Let's read that again. The spiritual master is the manifested representation of the Supreme Lord because he receives and presents the instructions of the Lord as they are by disciplic succession. It is described in Bhagavad Gita that the teachings therein should be received by disciplic succession, otherwise there is adulteration. To act under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master with a motive to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pure devotional service. But if one has a motive for personal sense gratification, his devotional service is manifested differently. Such a man may be violent, proud, envious, and angry, and his interests are separate from the Lord's. One who approaches the Supreme Lord to render devotional service, but who is proud of his personality, envious of others, or vengeful, is in the mode of anger. He thinks that he is the best devotee. Devotional service executed in this way is not pure. It is mixed and is of the lowest grade, tamasa. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur advises that a Vaishnava who is not of good character should be avoided. A Vaishnava is one who has taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life. But if one is not pure and still has motives, then he is not a Vaishnava of the first order of good character. One may offer his respects to such a Vaishnava because he has accepted the Supreme Lord as the ultimate goal of life. But one should not keep company with a Vaishnava who is in the mode of ignorance. We see in some of Srila Prabhupada's writings, in his letters, he was complaining that some of his disciples, they have bad habits, like they don't even wash their hands after eating. It's almost not imaginable, but Prabhupada was complaining like that. He said they're not fit to be Brahmins. On the other hand, when some controversy came up, there was a controversy. There was one person, charismatic figure, who had received Prabhupada's books and become a guru himself by taking some instructions from Prabhupada's books and mixing it up with his own, some of his own ideas. And later on he came to Prabhupada and he got quite a big following. And later on he came to Prabhupada and he became Prabhupada's disciple, and all his disciples, they got initiated by Prabhupada. But he would still keep, him and his followers would still keep somewhat separate from the standard ISKCON. He's still going on today. So they would criticize that, well, they're not really pure devotees. See, they're too passionate, and they're very rough, and we are very gentle. And they didn't like book distribution. I think it's too rough, it's too aggressive. They would just go in the streets, they would sing with very gently, not very heavy kirtan, they'd sing with guitars. They'd go in kami clothes, just pajamas, and this kurta like this. So in response to a question, it was one of the followers of this, actually I lived with him, this devotee, for several years in In Bangladesh she was with me. So he sent a letter, it was before he was initiated, to Prabhupada that, you know, who's actually a pure devotee? And Prabhupada said that all of my disciples are pure devotees. On one hand he was saying they're not fit to be Brahmins. On the other hand he was saying they're all pure devotees. So if we're to discuss devotional service in the mode of ignorance, we'd think, well, maybe someone who's not very clean, or they sleep a lot, or is symptoms of the mode of ignorance. But it might be that someone has such symptoms but is still considered a pure devotee, because it's not pure in the absolute sense of the term, but because they want to follow the path of pure devotional service, but due to conditioning, previous conditioning, it's difficult for them to overcome some bad habits. But such a person, they're expected to, because they're sincere to follow, they're expected to reform quickly. Shipram bhavati dharmatma. They quickly become reformed. If someone goes on for years and years without any improvement, then such a person is called a pretender. So they're in devotional service, but they're not really very sincere, because devotion, we should come out of Maya and come to the purified stage. So this here is being described, one who executes devotional service in the mode of ignorance. That means that the mode of ignorance is more prominent than the bhakti. If the motive is to serve Krishna, then even when it's coming from a background overlaid with ignorance and passion, then by the power of bhakti, bhakti is purifying. That is one of the symptoms of bhakti. Klesha Agni, what's the next? Shubhada. Then? Then? Sudurlava. Sandra Ananda Visheshatma, Shri Krishna Akasha Nichasa. So devotional service, that is purifying. So if one may be coming from heavily conditioned background, but then by the power of bhakti one should overcome those bad habits. But if one is taking to bhakti but his motive is not really to serve Krishna, then these other symptoms will remain prominent. One doesn't become purified. So you may think, well, why would someone who's angry, proud, why would they take to devotional service at all? Because the tamagun and bhakti are completely opposite. The modes of material nature are different to bhakti. And pure bhakti, the modes of material nature have no standing. Shuddha bhakti is nirguna. This in a few verses, Kapila Dev will describe the pure devotional service as being nirguna, beyond the. He describes bhakti executed in tamagun, then in rajagun, then in sattvagun, and then nirgun. Beyond the pure devotional service is beyond the modes of material nature. So it has nothing to do with the modes, and the mode of nature that is furthest away from bhakti, which is the antithesis of bhakti, is the mode of ignorance. Envy. One of the violence, as a pure devotee, is just the opposite of envious. He's udara, udara sarva evete. The quality of a devotee, even a beginning devotee, he's udar. He's liberal, magnanimous. Udaranam charitanam vasundhaiva kutumbakam. Envious means you think it's enviousness comes from aham mameti, I, me, and mine. I want this, no one else should have it. But udar, the characteristic of one who is udar is he sees all the world as just like his family members. He doesn't differentiate between myself and others. So a pure devotee is just the opposite from the mode of ignorance. Then why would anyone... How is it that one in the mode of ignorance has any contact with bhakti at all? So the word here, bhinnadrig bhava, a separatist, his attitude is one of separate. He comes to devotional service not actually to serve Krishna, but with some, he sees there's some opportunity here. There's something I can get out of this. He has some other motivation. Bhinnadrik, he sees differently. He doesn't see that everything is meant for Krishna, but he sees there's opportunity to take some advantage. Prabhupada writes more than once in his purports that sometimes we see people take to devotional service and when their financial condition is a bit improved, they go away again. And we practically see in our movement, especially in poorer countries, India, Bangladesh, South America, some people come to devotional service and their economic condition improves. They go to America and then they to do pujari service or something like this, and as soon as they get their green card, they're out on the beach selling t-shirts and like this. But most of them, or many of them that do that, they'll still come to the temple on Sundays. So it's not that they're not devotees, or at least they'll come to Ratha Yatra or something like this. It's not that they're not devotees. So some of them may be wholly materially motivated, but they may have some attraction to Krishna, but the personal motivation or practical consideration, to use a euphemism, that's stronger. Or it may be that in devotional service, if one comes but doesn't hear from pure devotees. From pure devotees here means at least those who are attempting to imbibe and inculcate the mode of pure devotional service. If you don't hear what we're supposed to be doing here, we're supposed to be giving up all personal motivations and surrendering to Krishna, then it's inevitable that we will take to devotional service in the way that we might take to anything else in the material world. Just like, just over the road there's some club. What do they do there? They play cards. So I have no idea about this club, who goes there or whatever, but sure there must be some politics there about who will be in charge, who will be the secretary, because every institution, there's some politics, and someone wants to get the better position and this and that. So people may take to bhakti like that also, thinking that, well, it's another institution, and here I can get some good position, and people will respect me, and I have some abilities, proud, I have some abilities more than others. If one doesn't hear, he may have some piety by which he has some kind of attraction to this way of life, but it's mixed up with strong conditioning, so that one may take it as a career. That was very prominent in our movement at one time, because some of the leaders, especially one of them who became very prominent, he developed the movement very strongly in one area. He was getting lots of books distributed and purchasing lots of properties and meeting all big people in society. But it was very much... it was structured like a corporation. And they actually introduced what they called horizontal, vertical management systems. And they're really into management systems. And he was a very intelligent leader. But it all collapsed because... it seems his motive, which in the beginning may have been pure, he became enamored by the power and the position, and then everyone in that area also became enamored by that, and they lost the taste of what it means to be a devotee. How sweet it is, how it is really in our self-interest to engage in the sweetness of devotional service. That's why Prabhupada wanted us to hear and chant together. Don't forget the essence. We have so many things to do, so much work to do, but you have to hear and chant together. This is our essence, is the essence of what we're doing. If otherwise, and hearing means I am meant for Krishna. So if we don't hear that, then the tendency is to maintain a separatist attitude, because that's the way we see the world, this bhinnadrig bhav, separatist attitude. Everyone in the material world has this attitude, that I am separate from Krishna. Krishna, my interest is separate from serving Krishna. So even if one goes through the motions of devotional service, one chants, but unless one hears, unless one imbibes this understanding that I am meant for Krishna, then we'll remain at the very neophyte stage of and thinking in terms of aham mameti, I, me and mine. My temple, my zone, my disciples. Instead of thinking that these are, even if we think my disciple, of course in one sense, yes, but in another sense we should understand that these are all, these disciples are meant for serving Krishna, not meant for serving me. I may accept service as part of my duty in training them to serve Krishna, but I am not the enjoyer. One who is the Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was explaining that a Mahabhagavat thinks that he's the disciple of everyone. And therefore he's the only person qualified to be a guru. You got that? A Mahabhagavat sees every person as his guru. Therefore he's the only one who's qualified to be a guru. Because he thinks that everyone is a devotee except me, so they're all my gurus. So he's the only one. But of course, to execute the function of guru, he comes to the Madhyam Adhikari platform to execute that function. But if one starts thinking, my disciples, and they should glorify me, then one becomes in a very dangerous condition. So envy, pride, and when that increases, these are the symptoms of conditioned souls. And when that increases more, then violence and anger. We were discussing last night about these football hooligans who they deliberately go to a football game to be violent, because they know that some other violent supporters of another team there, and they go there specifically for the sake of fighting with each other. There's nothing to fight about. I mean, it's not that you can understand if someone's attacking your country or something, there's something to fight about, but there's no real reason to fight, but they invent a reason, which is the football game. And just on the basis of that, they're so anxious to cause violence to others that they make an excuse for it, which is the football. And even they're not playing. I remember once there were two British teams that were playing in separate places in Europe, and their fans, they met on the ferry going over. They're not playing against each other, but still they fought. They had a big fight. So just because that envy, that they're feeling, we must cause harm to others. Very perverted mentality. How could one in devotional service be like that? Devotional service means the heart should become soft. And this envy and violence means the heart is hard. That means that one is not really entered into devotional service. I mean, we don't want to say any names, but we've seen that some devotees in our movement, they're very hard. They have some position of authority, and they're very, very harsh on their subordinates. Of course, Prabhupada could also be very hard, more hard than anyone. But that was, devotees felt that harshness as, what is that, kusumapi komol, then vajradapi kotor, that the simultaneously as soft as a flower and as hard as a thunderbolt. So they felt the softness through the hardness, that the hardness is meant for breaking the hardness on my heart, which is stopping me from actually surrendering to Krishna. But if it's only hardness and there's no softness, it's just taking a position to be nasty and others, then neither that person can advance in devotional service, nor can anyone in his association. It becomes very difficult. So this analysis is here of those who have a separate mentality. Those who have a separate mentality, they cannot advance in devotional service. If one has some contamination of tamagun but comes to devotional service, there's some spark of feeling that, yes, I want to surrender to Krishna, then the tamagun can be overcome. But if one is coming to bhakti with clearly some separate motive, of course it may not be very clear, that's the problem, that's why Piladev is analyzing it, but a predominant other motive, then even then some purification may be there, but it's, unless one is in contact with very powerful devotees, then one will maintain one's separatist attitude and go on. One may go on throughout life and then like that. And also another point is that those who have this separate attitude, then they'll adjust the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. They'll reinterpret it. That must be there. Because their activities and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, they don't go together, so they adjust it. This is the way that the upper sampradayas develop. People have desires separate from those of service to Krishna, but they want to present themselves as devotees. Therefore, they say that what I'm doing, this is actually pleasing to Krishna, even though it's not. So it's actually a cheating process. Just like these Saki Bakis, they say, well, Krishna likes gopis, so I'll dress as a gopi. It doesn't like you, smelly. You have to shave twice a day, otherwise your beard becomes... his gopis, they are transcendental gopis, not your stinking body, male features and a sari. That's nonsense. But they have some strange desires to dress as women, and you might say that's an extreme example, but there are so many upper sampradayas. So here it's recommended, don't associate with such people. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, he went to the West and he picked up all kinds of people. Really. All kinds and more. Whatever kind you can imagine and some more unimaginable. Just like when Prabhupada was asked, well, what do you mean? Prabhupada was saying they're mostly coming from the background of the hippies. And then the reporter asked, well, what do you mean by a hippie? Prabhupada said, that you can say better than me. Something extraordinary. So it was amazing that Prabhupada saw in these actually crazy people the spark of desire to serve Krishna. And he had faith in the process of Krishna consciousness that they could become purified by that. And Prabhupada emphasized kirtan and prasadam, but he also gave lectures. And in the early days of them, right from the very beginning, his lectures were just straight, strong and heavy. When it came to the philosophy, the kirtan, sometimes I had kirtan, you can bring whatever instruments you like, and the prasadam, yeah, just give them lots of prasadam. This was like some attraction. But the philosophy, he was just straightforward, right from the very beginning. That, all right, now you're attracted, now you listen. If you really want to know what this is all about, you listen to this, and then they can understand how serious this is and what is the actual philosophy of Krishna consciousness. There's no compromise in Prabhupada's, at least in his formal presentation of philosophy. Sometimes in speaking with people, he would say things which, although not untrue, but sometimes he would present the philosophy in a manner which was palatable for people to accept. Just like Satsarupa Maharaj, who was, before coming to Krishna consciousness, he was very much attracted to reading all different books of different philosophers and novels, and he thought these people are good because they seem to, you know, sort of have some empathy for suffering humanity. I remember reading myself, I used to read so many books. There's a book by, short book called John Steinbeck, an American author, called Of Mice and Men. It's taken from Shakespeare. So it describes about how there was a huge guy, and he was very simple mentally, and he liked mice, and he used to play by then. He just accidentally killed them. Why am I telling this? Anyway, I'll finish it. And then it's a short book. And then he accidentally killed a person one day because he didn't know how strong he was, and he accidentally killed. So he's kind of showing. I remember after reading that, thinking that, well, I'd like to meet this person who wrote the book. He has a lot of feeling for people. So anyway, Satsarupa Maharaj asked, well, what about all these novelists? And are they also not devotees? It's a very naive question to ask, actually. But are they also not good? And Prabhupada said, well, they're good as much as they are sincere. So he didn't directly say, yes, yasti bhakti bhagavatya kinchana savaya gunais tattva samasute sura. Harava bhaktasya kuto mahanguna manoratenasti davatoga. He didn't say, because he could see that he was attached to think of these writers, they're good people. So he didn't say that anyone who's in this circumstance, Prabhupada didn't say anyone who's not a devotee has no good qualities. He says as much as they are sincere. So that's true. Of course, how Satsarupa at the time understood the word sincere and how Prabhupada understood it is something different. But he didn't, he presented it like that, in a manner that he could digest at the time. Satsarupa wrote so many books about Prabhupada, and all little anecdotes, little experiences he had, and then he'd analyze it, why Prabhupada was doing this. So many books he wrote like that. So this hearing, by hearing, we can gradually become purified. Here it's recommended not to associate with persons, even with devotees who are in the mode of ignorance. But if one is very strong, he can purify. Otherwise, one may become affected by their bad association. That's why it's recommended not to associate with them, even though they're devotees of sorts. But you won't make spiritual advancement because they have a different motive. So, There's also this idea, well, we're all devotees. But we're all devotees, so it's all the same. But we have to see what is someone's motive, what is his character. If one is a devotee but he's not of good character, Prabhupada quotes this several times in his books from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he should be avoided. Because if we say that, well, good character, bad character, it's all the same, then the substratum of bhakti, which is generic dharma, if we don't follow the basic dharma, which is required for everyone, then how can our bhakti develop? Bhakti is not developed, not dependent on generic dharma, but if we don't follow that, then if we are affected by the lower modes of nature, then we will remain conditioned by the lower modes of nature. So we should hear that we have to be unmotivated without any personal motivation. This is often also misused, actually, that you should not have any motive, you should just do everything for Krishna. Someone says that and they're actually taking it that, oh, you just do what I say and you don't have any other personal desire. I am the representative of Krishna. We've seen many times. That's one reason why in our movement at the present time, often devotees, they don't want to follow authorities because it has been misused. They say, well, you shouldn't do whatever you like, you just follow authority, do what I say, which actually Prabhupada said, is that we should follow authorities. But then sometimes that was misused because the authorities themselves, they had some personal ambition to fulfill in the name of devotional service. So a major point here is that our own devotional service should be pure of motive. Another important point is that it's very important to see what level of association we're taking. That's why Lord Kapila Dev is telling that it's not all the same, that different devotees may have different motivations. So we should intimately associate with those devotees whose association can help us, can purify us, who are sincerely striving to serve Krishna. Otherwise, they may be working very hard, but if they have some other motive, then that will come out in due course of time. One may be apparently very successful in devotional service, and someone was telling me, someone was saying that, oh, such and such, he's a very successful guru, he's got lots of disciples. Is that how you succeed? They see it as some kind of material endeavor. Like in the material world, if you get more money and you have a company with 1,000 people working for you, you're considered successful. So is it the same in bhakti that you're more successful because you have more disciples? It's a very strange attitude. How many disciples did Gaukishadas Bhamji Maharaj have? That one, he delivered the whole world. So this mundane attitude come from this separate vision, separatist vision. One can see clearly, as Srila Prabhupada comments in the fourth canto, Krishna consciousness means to see the universe, to see everything the way Krishna sees it, the way Krishna did. Krishna sees it, of course, that I am the enjoyer of everything. Everything is mine. Aham sarvasya prabhavaham. That means to see everything in relation to Krishna, to see the way Krishna directs us to see it. Otherwise, if we see separately, that Krishna is there and I'm here, and I have my interest and Krishna's interest, I'll do a little seva, and I'll get something back. That's Prabhupada says, it's a business deal. It's like you go to the factory, you do some work and you get some pay. The worker has a different interest to that of the manager or to the owner. So That's material life. But bhakti means to have no other interest. That mood has to be uncultivated. Otherwise we may even sing all the songs, but Sarvasvata, I am fully surrendered to you, Bhaktinota. We may sing, but we actually have to cultivate that path. One thing I was thinking of discussing at some point, that there's one thing that Prabhupada stressed so much, and we don't discuss it much nowadays, probably because it's difficult to understand how it could be done, and probably everyone will run away if we say it. But Prabhupada, he often said, it comes up many times in his writings, that, you ready, Grihasthas, for this one? Prabhupada said that 50% of your income should be spent for devotional service. And we don't preach that anymore because no one's prepared to do it. Anyway, it seems. And it's difficult to imagine how it could be done, because what with rents and just living costs, just living at a minimal level seems to cost like 150% of your income. Everyone's living in debt, so it's difficult to understand. But I'm just thinking of this, that we're going and collecting from the public, and actually our devotees who are grihasthas, they should also give Lakshmi. Otherwise, if it's Prabhupada criticized that some rich man, he retires and goes to live in Vrindavan. And he says, he leaves all the money for the family. He says, my bhakti is for Krishna, my money is for the family. So Prabhupada, he didn't appreciate that. So anyway, I won't go into detail now. That's another subject. But I'm just thinking how to bring this up among our grihasthas in a manner that they don't all run away. But that's also an important part of surrender. If we think my bhakti is for Krishna, but my money is for me and my family, then it's difficult to see how we can advance more. All right, Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? Yes, please.
Bhakti in the
most, or is devotee in the most? Yeah, bhakti, that's an important point. I discussed that yesterday, right? That bhakti is by its nature is pure. It says here, sattamasa. Sa means, he refers to not to bhakti, but to the performer. Bhakti is nirgun. I was discussing that yesterday. How we say shuddhanam, namabhas, namaparad. But actually, nam is only shuddha. But when we say the reflection of the holy name, actually the name is all effulgent. The name are. So it's not that devotional service is within the modes of nature. By definition, it cannot be. But it appears to be being covered by the attitude of the performer. Just like we say, the conditioned soul, Baddha Jeev. The Jeev is by nature pure, but covered by wrong conception. Otherwise, bhakti, that I was saying, is just the opposite of tamagun. It's completely opposite. The two things don't mix, but it may appear to. So we should see ourselves that we violence to others. The violence doesn't mean only physical violence, but the desire to do harm. Someone should not do better than me. I was told in one temple, someone, he's been for many years the top collector, and some new boy joined and he was collecting more, and he told him, you don't collect more than me or I'll break your legs. He said, you can collect one paisa less than me, but don't collect more. So I heard this. It's believable. So not to want to harm others. The opposite of that is udarta. That's another bit. I want to discuss that some other time. Yeah. In the Shastra, there are so many examples of magnanimity. Rantidev, Harishchandra. These are in the Dronacharya. He knew that, Drishyajumna is to kill me, but he trained him in fighting anyway. Because he was a liberal attitude, open attitude. So that udarata is superlatively manifest in the character of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mahavadanya, and his followers. But that's another discussion. It's the opposite of hingsa. In this material world, hingsa is the desire to harm others. It's another manifestation of matsarya. These words, hingsa, actually in Bengali the word hingsa is the normal word. It means the opposite of love or affection or good feeling. The word hingsa is used. Matsarya, irsha is another word. They're similar words. Then pride, anger.
We can see that because ISKCON activities mostly we are preaching to many people, and many people will join, not maybe because of the pure motivation, but they will be somehow attracted. And how to accommodate such a people? We are giving them position and sometimes happen this and that. So
someone gets position. It seems to me that often people get position not because of a spiritual qualification, but because of a material qualification. Because to manage in this material world, even a spiritual organization, some kind of, if someone has some leadership qualities, or even if they don't have leadership qualities, if they're somewhat more adept at interacting with the material world than others around him, he may get some position. And it's often people who think in terms like this, that I should be big, I should be prominent, they're the ones who kind of elbow themselves into position, or by some, they know this, you know, you have to flatter this person and then he'll give you a position, and it becomes mundane actually. And it happens, it's inevitable in an organization. Whereas someone who's more advanced, you might not even notice them, because they're just doing some humble service. So it's not necessarily true. I'm not saying that every leader in ISKCON is basically materially motivated, but it's an intrinsic danger within an institution that people of a spiritual institution that people take position largely because of a motive which is not conducive to the spiritual interest of the institution. Even then it might be conducive to the material interest. Of course, nothing's material, but you could say the external manifestation. Just like there was one the manager in the Gauriya Mat, and people, the devotees came and complained to Bhaktisthan Sarasara Thakur, said, he's stealing so much. He said, what does that matter to you? What did you come here for? You came to do bhajan. You do bhajan. He said, if I had to hire a person as expert as him, I'd have to pay so much money anyway. That was his outlook. And difficult to understand. That was the cause of the split of the Gauriya Mat, actually. People were... Well, it's complex, but Prabhupada said that. He cited that as the main reason that people were upset with him. And after the fire was going on, inside. And then when Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur left, the volcano exploded. And it would have gone on if, anyway. It's a complex history. But then that person who was accused as such, he did maintain the institution throughout his life, and it's going on to the present day, and people are still coming to that and becoming Krishna conscious. So, the will of the Lord, that may be beyond our capacity to fully understand. Prabhupada compared him to Putana, that he came with a different intention. Putana came with a different intention to Krishna. So this person came with a different motivation to my Guru Maharaj. But just as Krishna delivered Putana, so my Guru Maharaj delivered him anyway. Yeah, please. Yeah, it's a big subject, right?
Is there any education that the registrars can get about how to do it? Because we meet sometimes and we discuss on this. Finally, we land up with the thing, how is this possible?
Yeah.
And then we just discuss. Even though the idea comes up, we are not able to.
One of Bhaktisthana Saraswati Thakur's disciples, Grihastha, he used to give 100%. And then Bhaktisthana Saraswati Thakur arranged to give something, a small amount, back to his wife for managing the family. And he said that that's the standard, although only one did. I don't think Prabhupada did. I don't know if he himself was giving 50%. He never said that he did. And then sometimes people say, well, it's 50% of that after your basic needs, but then your basic needs are unlimited. Yes, your basic needs are more than your income. What we think we need. I just said to one of our enterprising entrepreneurs, who's a businessman devotee here, saying that you're always losing money. You should make some vow before you do a venture that you'll give so much to Krishna before you do it. Then maybe Krishna will help you better. In Russia, there was one devotee, he started doing a business and it went very well. And from the beginning, he gave 50% to the temple and it just expanded and expanded and it became huge. And then his father saw that and he started giving 50%. His father is complete karmi. He was also doing business. He also started giving 50% and his business expanded. And then he started giving 70%. His father gave 70% and it expanded even more. He was selling blankets, which you can imagine in Russia. Somehow or other, there hadn't been some, I don't know, somehow or other. I mean, definitely blankets are needed in Russia about 8 months of the year. So maybe they were imported or something, I don't know. But it was a huge business. It's a big country, a big population, and it's damn cold a lot of the year. So I don't know if it would work out in every case, but it did in that case. What do you do? Stocks and shares? The dolphin swimming pool.
This time also I worked out, everything looked out that it was very nice. Finally when you land up, it is shortfall.
That's all you do, it's seasonal business only. Just for 2-3 months a year.
Can we expand our activity?
No, expand your bhakti better. But if you only have 2-3 months a year, then you should spend the rest of the time doing full-time bhakti, isn't it? Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki jai.